ॐ ज्ञानतिमरन्दस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनाशलाकाय चाक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यामनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपाकदामायं ददाति सापदन्तिकं वंशाकल्पातरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभयेव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीयद्वैतागदाधर श्रीवासुदेवोर्भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Can you get me some tissue or just something from the bathroom there, okay? Well, today we're talking about a very deep subject, Raganuga Bhakti, spontaneous devotional service. It's very confidential. That's probably why there's less people here today. And now the people didn't come will feel so bad when they watch the video. No, but there was a festival of inspiration, some kind of festival in New Vrindavan and a few things. And the spring is coming. Every day before the class, I pray for miserable weather so that people will come. Because I work hard, I really want to share. And this is a particularly challenging subject. Because I have to make sure it's not misunderstood. So we'll make an attempt. And in terms of the, you know, the subject, I'm not a person that just, you know, wants to cover things. I want things understood. But I'm not sure how we're going to finish everything, even what I prescribe in where we're up to right now is the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is like an ocean, right? And there's four sides to the ocean. We're on the eastern side, which describes a variety of devotional service. And my objective was in the first eight classes to finish all the varieties of devotional service, and in the last class, the ninth class, discuss and summarize the theory, the rasa theory behind the last three sections of the ocean. So, and I told you, I'm a coach, I'm a strategist, I'm trying to figure it out, but we'll have to see. I have some suggestions too, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to make a questionnaire and try to get it to everyone so we can see how even to improve and if there's other things that people want. In general, I have an idea. I'm not sure yet, but maybe after my class in June, continue once a month until I leave. And, you know, that way, it really, because the last section is just so relishable. It's really, you get into the pastimes and you really get a vision of what our theology is in terms of the spiritual world. And it's fascinating and it's very enlivening. And so we'll see. I have different ideas how we can do and even suggestions how we can continue even next year, because there's another book by Rupa Goswami called Upadeshamrita, which is called The Nectar of Instructions. And in 12 verses, he covers the gamut of Krishna consciousness from the very beginning to the highest thing. And I've taught that, and there's different commentaries on that that I've also used to supplement Prabhupada's, and it's a fascinating subject, beginning from, the favorable things for devotional service, what's unfair, so many different things. It's just beautiful. So we'll get to that. So by next week, I hope to be able to get that. Now, today's strategy is, because we didn't finish chapter 13 and 14, and a quick review of chapter 13, which is very, very important because it's the five most potent items of devotional service. So, Jagannath, can you shut the back door? Don't lock it. Maybe leave it open an inch so anybody who comes late feels very welcome. Yeah, it's a perfect Jagannath. No, leave that. I like lights. Don't mess with lights. Keep them on. So, and then next week, hopefully I can get a review of chapter 14, which we didn't finish, which is also very interesting because it relates the relationship between bhakti and jnana and vairagya, knowledge and renunciation. And it's a very interesting thing also. And I know one of my weaknesses in teaching, because there's so much to cover, is I don't leave room for questions. So I don't know how I'll rectify that. Okay. The five most potent items of devotional service. That's right up there. This is really so essential, because you remember, there's 64 as what Rupa Goswami did is his brother in a book called Hari Bhakti Vilas. He made really a law book with so many rules and details, a little bit concerned on the people of that time that were attached to, ritual, etc., to bring bhakti into their conception and their authority. And Rupa Goswami, he summarized them in 64 practices. And remember, what is a practice of devotional service? It's how you engage your mind in... You can come up if you want. No problem. You feel... We're just happy to see every soul that comes. Remember, is if we engage our mind and focus it on Krishna, it brings out the natural love in our heart. I think it's just like a newborn child sees their mother. There's love because there's a relationship. So there's 64 of those items, and we discussed them. I don't really have to go over them again, beginning with the first three, which is Guru Pratishaya, taking shelter of a guru, and then the first 10 are the rules, the most important rules, and then the next 10 are the most important regulations. And then he concludes it that there's five that are the most potent. And I was just on the phone with someone just discussing some of these subjects, and he mentioned something to me that I thought was interesting. I never heard it, but it seems to... that these five items are the five main manifestations of Krishna in this world. And therefore, they're especially potent when you focus on them. And even makes a statement, if you focus on them in a simple mood, without offense, it's very interesting how that kind of works. It's almost, faith is almost like a sense in the mind that allows us to experience God and can be closed by doubt and can be closed by offense. And then somehow or other, when you're innocent sometimes, you can get a big experience of Krishna consciousness because you approach things in such a fresh, innocent, accepting way. And that's the way we should always accept devotional items with faith. But when you do that and you come in contact with sadhu sangha, association of devotees, not just devotees, but real first-class sadhu sangha, is more advanced, like-minded. Somehow they communicate Krishna consciousness to your frame of reference. One time a friend of mine complained to this other Vaishnava, who was very senior, about another Vaishnava who he didn't like. And I like what the other Vaishnava said. He said there's many types of devotees, but somehow like-minded. And like-minded for us generally means someone is much more advanced to us, but they can be in another line and even have different conceptions and different views. That's not our sadhu sangha. Our sadhu sangha is in our line, more advanced. And even in our line, like-minded, it's called swajatiya. It means from the same family. And sneha. Sneha means affectionate, because it's bhakti. Bhakti is based on affection for Krishna, and that first manifests in terms of our affection for the devotees. So that's first class. Well, that's sadhu sangha. It's very, very powerful. And then nama kirtan. Nama shreshtam. Rupa Goswami, it's Raghunath Das, I think. He's listing all the ways we should be thankful to the spiritual master. Nama Shreshtam, Manumapi, Sachi Putra. He lists so many things, but Nama Shreshtam. Shreshtam means the best. Taramadye, Sarva Shreshte, Nama Kirtana, Nira Aparadipoya Paya Premadan. Of all the items, chanting the holy name is the best. And if you can do it without offense, you get the prema, the highest love. And then Bhagavat Shravana, hearing the stories and philosophy of Krishna. And it's considered that God is non-different than his message. He manifests in many, many ways. He manifests in his name. He manifests in his devotees. In fact, previously, in the what's called the Satyayuga, the Golden Age, there was no deity worship, because people were so faithful and people were so qualified that you could see God in other people's hearts. Now, because of our envy, it's hard for us to do that, and it's hard for people to represent that so they don't disappoint us. So there's the absolute form of the deity. So that's Sri Murtiya, the deity, the Murti, the deity, which is like the manifestation of God in matter. Very, very powerful. In fact, I'm so much appreciating that I have a little room in the Bhakti Center. It took me a few years to qualify. Otherwise, I was sleeping wherever I could get a place, really. And I go to the Mangal Arti, me and Jai Giridhari, and Murali Gopal. And before the deities, singing in the morning, seeing those beautiful forms of Radha Muralidhar, so attractive, beautifully dressed, beautiful garlands, it has such an effect on the heart. This is how bhakti works. And it's not just seeing it, it's coming towards these things in a simple mood, a simple, open-hearted mood. Right, Lisa? Like in Vrindavan, right? Just a simple-hearted, carefree mood, opening our hearts to the holy name, to the beautiful deities in the temple, to hearing the stories. You know, we're in that simple mood. So much love comes into our hearts.
ready to go back.
I know. That's another thing. I'm thinking next year of maybe doing a kind of a special retreat, you know, in Vrindavan, and doing it just like we did, just have it for more days. And the same kind of thing is that people take care of their own expenses, and I'm there, and I'll just help everyone. And we'll, you know, just, yeah, that expense. And, therefore, Mataravas, visiting the holy places. These are so potent that Rupa Goswami has stated that five kinds of devotional service, namely residing in Mathura, means Vrindavan, worshipping the deity of the Lord, reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, serving the devotee, and, typo, my fault, and chanting the Hare Krishna mantra are so potent that even a small attachment to any of these items can arouse devotional ecstasy in a neophyte. And what is a neophyte? Doesn't have much attachment. And what is devotional ecstasy? Extreme attachment. So even the ones that don't have that, they can experience this. And let's take Mathura Vas. I see so many of the people that have here that have visited Vrindavan and had those experiences. You remember, Saibel, when you got lost with the Indian kirtan party of ladies that came by and they thought they were going to have to call your husband and tell you weren't returning home. We were so glad that you came back to the party. Right? And Kishore, you remember the ecstasy of that root canal in Vrindavan? Yeah. But still.
There was so much that came out of that.
Can you imagine? She had a week off. She came to go to Vrindavan. And then I know a doctor, and she was in so much pain at every place we went. He said, "You got to have a root canal." And she got a root canal in Vrindavan.
Oh,
and this is what the dentist told her. Here, we use the Novocaine after. Lucky Tom was there and put his foot down before. But she, anyway, we won't go into that. But wonderful being in Vrindavan.
I would go through that every time.
If you can be in Vrindavan. Yeah, it's just, I'm sorry to ruin everybody's. But they did put it before. They did put it before. Okay, now the whole class is out of, like, everyone is just holding their mouths and suffering so much. Okay. Let's go on, otherwise we won't cover. But it just shows you that there's something that comes that's so deep in these places, you know. So now Rupa Goswami, he composed his own beautiful verses. Unfortunately, I can't chant them in the original, but they're poetry, and they're very beautiful. And this first one, it shows you, it says, devotional ecstasy is bhava. Now, next week, we're going to discuss bhava and prema. Those are the next varieties of devotional service, which somehow or other, philosophically, and to explain it, it's much more simple than explaining this week, which I'll do after I get through this. Because it's very clear. And Raghunuga Bhakti is like high feelings, but when you're in the stage of practice and to really get where it belongs, you really have to explain it. I've studied this my whole life, so I hope I can sum it up. So he uses a literary technique where you say one thing and you mean the opposite. So I'll give the gist of the verse about how. So when we're going to study bhava, there are nine symptoms of bhava, which are very practical, so that people just don't roll on the floor and say, "I'm an advanced devotee." or start to cry and say, "I'm an advanced devotee." But it's practical. And one of them is, when you really get bhava in your heart, you become indifferent to any other attachment. You become indifferent. Until you get bhava, then you have to work through your attachments. I remember one of my godbrothers who was in India in a very, very important, you know, global meeting. And then it was like a crucial issue being discussed, and then he got a call from his father, you know, please come see me now. I don't know how long I'm going to live, and, you know. So he was wondering, is this just an attachment? You know, I'm a sannyasi, I've given up to... And I remember he consulted this very senior person. He said, no, until the stage of bhava, you know, these feelings will remain, and that one should, you know, appropriately work through them. But here he says, Rupa Goswami's verses says, don't go to Vrindavan. Don't go to the bank of the Jamuna by the Keshi Ghat. Don't see the beautiful form of Sri Sri Radha Govinda. And and when he's saying don't, he's saying do. Because what he's saying, he said, if you are all attached to society, friendship, and love, don't go to Vrindavan. We almost lost Cybele. Don't go to Vrindavan. Don't go to the Jamuna Keshi Ghat. Why he's saying don't, he's saying do go, and you'll get this hot, and this is one of the symptoms. It's called viraktir of bhava. You become completely indifferent to the world. So he says, my dear friend, if you have any desire to enjoy the company of your friends within this material world, then don't look upon the form of Krishna, who is standing on the bank of Keshi Ghat. He is known as Govinda, and his eyes are very enchanting. He is playing upon his flute, and on his head there is a peacock feather, and his whole body is illuminated by the moonlight of the sky. So if you're all attached to friendship, society, love, don't go to the Bhakti Center. Don't go to see the beautiful form of Sri Sri Radha Muralidhar. So, and then hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, and these are just some verses about it. I love the second. A person who writes Vaishnava literature and keeps such literature at home has Lord Narayan always residing in his house. So it's none different than God. It's God in message. Not just the ink and the paper, it's the message. And it's very, very, very powerful. And the last verse is, again, the same kind of literary technique by Rupa Goswami. My dear foolish friend, I think you have already heard some of the auspicious Srimad Bhagavatam, which decries the results of fruitive activities, economic development, and liberation. I think now it is certain that gradually the verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, describing the pastimes of the Lord, will enter your ears and hearts. So that's one of the symptoms of bhava is moksha lugudakrit. You remember? It makes liberation. You've heard some of this book, which when you get bhakti, then moksha lugudakrit, it makes luguda means very, very small, very insignificant. So that's a symptom of bhava too. And so they're very, very powerful, these items. And serving the devotees, it's so powerful to actually serve the Vaishnavas. Worship of Vishnu is the highest form of worship, but even higher than that, O goddess, is the worship of my devotees. Simply by remembering you, our houses have become instantly sanctified, and what to speak of seeing you, touching you, washing your holy feet, and offering you a seat at home. Ever since I saw a certain person whose body was washed with his own tears, whose hairs were standing on end, and who stumbled around with a joyous heart while quivering to the extreme, my mind had for some reason become so attached to the form that I have no attachment to my family. So, you know, I'll give you an example of that. I told you that in the early days of ISKCON, they drew a line. You're a devotee when you're in the temple. There was no congregation. it was this revolution among young people. And we've matured in ways. But therefore, it took me 4 years. I met devotees in 1970 to step over the, you know. And how it happened, I was visiting one temple in Texas, a temple in Dallas, Texas, and I was visiting the temple, and Prabhupada came to the temple, and they invited everybody that was there to go upstairs and get prasadam from his hand, two rasgullas, about 150 people. So I remember, as soon as I got those rasgullas, you know, I just stayed. Anyway, powerful. Chanting the holy name. We know that. We hear so much about that. You know, and serving the devotees, it's so powerful. There's one book that I'm teaching on Wednesday evenings by phone. A few of you people sometimes listen there. And it tells stories of different people coming to Krishna consciousness. And it tells about this really miserly married couple that never likes to serve the Vaishnavas. Because in that type of culture, you know, if you're a married person and you are, you know, are living at home, you invite the devotees, you feed them, you host programs, you know, you have kirtans, and they would never like to do it. And then it said that their kids also, their children also became miserly. Their children also became miserly. And it made us, and it said, and then I just thought, you know, where I stay, upstate New York, there's one nice family. They run that mantrology, Sachi, Sutta, and Kaylee. They have a record company. And you know, they're in the world, they're sports coaches of their high school teams, and they do the Ironman, and they, you know, and they work, you know, they're half the time, you know, they're going to Little League for their kids and all, so many things. But, you know, he served the devotees so nicely. You know, I didn't have a place to stay. I'm a wandering monk, and he renovated a barn, and then this person who wrote Prabhupada's biography got ill, and he picked him up, and he gave him a house and give him. And then this lady, who is a very saintly lady and a widow, that he, you know, she was at a temple in Gitanagari, and she became very, very ill, and he went and picked her up and took care of her medical, and also gave her a little house and car and takes care. And yeah, he's always just serving the devotees. And I see as a result, even though the children didn't grow up in a devotional, you know, like community, like a Latra or like these type of places, they have such good feelings towards the devotees. You know, now his daughter's going to college, and she's always in Philadelphia going to the Govindas and Hariashra and that program. And her other daughter, you know, went on this Kishori Yatra with the young girls, and really. So I just saw that that's the effect of serving the devotees. And residing in Mathura or Vrindavan, very, very powerful. It says, such transcendental feelings are aroused immediately without fail after one arrives in Mathura and Vrindavan. And it's such a fact. And I always tell the story of my parents who came and were inimical initially. And then they came to I told this story here, but it's so charming, I'll tell it again. And they were inimical, and they came to Vrindavan. And for them at that time, it wasn't like when you came on Raghunath's tour, however you came. You know, there were no Western toilets. You know, it was like, there was, you know, there wasn't even bottled drinking water at the time. You know, electricity didn't run. You know, there was no heat. There was not, you know, mother, parents. So it was kind of pretty primitive for my parents. And, you know, I remember taking my mother to the temple. And I kept on trying to show her the deities, and all she saw were those big chandeliers. She was just looking at them, beautiful big chandeliers. That's all she could see. But when I came the next morning, my mother admitted to me, reluctantly, that she woke up in the middle of the night chanting Hare Krishna. So I just thought it's so powerful. And then it says that these statements are not overestimations, nor are they stories. They're actually fact, but are true for certain devotees and do not necessarily apply to all. It can happen, and I've seen it happen. I gave the story of that old Israeli man from Israel. An Israeli man, where's he going to be from? that old man from Israel. And he came, I don't know why he was doing there, Shlomo, and he came before the deities and began to weep and cry and cry and cry and cry and stayed. And to this day, now they have a little temple in Israel and they take care of him and he's like the father of everyone. He's the kind of guy, right, who's kind of like a little bit heavy set and fell in love with prasadam. And his greatest joy in life is cooking what's called garunga potatoes. Garunga potatoes are the richest preparation known to man. it's just garunga potatoes. You look it up, you'll see. Okay, and now there's two ways to practice devotion to perfection. Ek anga bhakti, anek anga bhakti, by one practice or many. You know, what is your taste? What do you like? You like chanting, like a kirtan, you like serving the deities, service, serving the devotees. You can do one and you can do many. And we have different proclivities and we have different tastes. And it's so powerful. And these are, remember there are nine main processes. And they have different exemplars. Like hearing is Maharaj, yes.
When you talk about service, you usually say service toward the devotees.
Yeah.
What about serving people who are not devotees? What's the delineation, like what's the rule?
Well, we can serve anyone, obviously. But what is service? And service is really, I mean, it's always good to do altruistic activities. Like, for example, if there's very, very poor people in Vrindavan, in the system in India, when someone is very poor, they just sit on the side of the road with a bowl and they chant. And they chant, and it's the duty of a grihastha married person to give them some donation. And when the devotees didn't, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta said, no, that's bad. It'll make your heart, your heart hard. But in our initial definition of bhakti, right, bhakti is to serve Krishna. So if you want to serve other people, you can serve other people best by connecting them to God. You know, because if you just do welfare activities in itself, you're not ultimately solving their problem. Because not that we should neglect that, but people are suffering, right, because they don't have knowledge. And they've done things wrong and they're getting karmic reaction. So if you just take care, it's like a hospital, you just take care of the symptoms and don't get at the root, right, then people will do this, you know. If you don't teach them hygiene, they'll just go out and get sick again. So the real service to people, the highest service to people, is actually giving them knowledge and purifying their heart and connecting them to God, because that's the root cause of all problems is ignorance. So, but serving, bhakti means Krishnanushilana, it means to serve Krishna. And Krishna is not limited. Krishna means his differentiated parts and parcels, which means the living entities, and it means his plenary parts, his plenary portions, his expansions. So it's serving. Yeah, so you can serve others, but you should serve them with knowledge and understanding of really how to elevate them. Okay? That help?
Yeah,
thank you, Molly. Chanting is Sukadeva. So Maharaj Prickett, he was cursed to die, and he listened for 7 days without drinking or eating. And that's the exemplar. And then Sukadeva Goswami, he was speaking it for 7 days, the exemplar of kirtan. And remembering Prahlad Maharaj, this wonderful story, humble service. Humble service means padasevana. It means serving the feet, but it really means humble service. Padasevana, Lakshmi Devi, temple worship, Prithu, famous prayers by Akrura. And those are the items. So there are exemplars. So that's all the items. That's an Ekanga Bhakti. That's Ekanga Bhakti. You can take one, as these people have concentrated on one. And then the next verse is about this King Ambarish, who did them all. He did them all. He concentrated his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, and engaged his speech in describing the pastime. He engaged his hands in washing the temple of the Lord, padasevanam, his ears in hearing of the transcendental glories of the Lord. He engaged his eyes in seeing the beautiful deity in the temple. The second canto, it says, what are the use of the senses if they're not engaged in God's service? It says, what is the use of eyes if they don't look on the beautiful form of the Lord? They're like the eyes on a peacock feather. What is the use of the tongue if it doesn't glorify God? It's like the croaking of the frog, which only attracts the snake. What is the use of opulence if it's not used to offer in the service of God? It's like wearing a turban when you're drowning. It only makes you go down faster. And what's the use of the legs if they don't walk towards the temple? They're like the legs on a tree trunk. Prabhupada said you can use the walking tendency to come to the temple or drive to the temple from New Jersey. It's all devotional service. Okay, we have actually 4 or 5 people that drive from New Jersey. Okay, now chapters 15 and 16. I'm going to start, and I'm going to do this in a different way. You know, I made this PowerPoint presentation that just covers what's discussed in Nectar Devotion, and when I read over the Nectar Devotion, I realized really how difficult that is to understand. You know, and that for me, really, to give you a good understanding of this, I'll just have to explain it. Because when I explain it, I have the option of kind of sensing which parts in your frame of reference you're lacking to understand it. So I may skip around, right? I may skip around to different places just to explain it. But now, just to put it in context, you remember we're discussing varieties of devotional service. So the first wave of the Eastern Division described a general overview of devotional service, right? And it gave an introduction. It defined what pure devotional service is. And then it gave the 6 characteristics of devotional service. Then the second wave, which began chapter 2, describe sadhana bhakti, who is eligible for it, what the definition of it is. And you remember what sadhana bhakti was? The practice of getting bhakti, real bhakti, pure bhakti, love of Godhead. And what is the practice? we use our senses to achieve a goal, which is this bhava, or love of Godhead. That's what sadhana bhakti was. Somehow you use your senses. And it described that they were basically, it had two divisions. One is vaidhi, where the inspiration to do that comes from your understanding that it's the right thing to do. And then the other type was called raganuga sadhana bhakti. There's still practices, and the inspiration came from a relationship you have with Krishna. And there are two different ways to practice. To absorb your mind, there's two different ways to do it. Vaidhi and Raganuga Bhakti. And the difference is what's called, I should have put this up, Lobha. Lobha, L-O-B-H-A. It means greed, a desire. I want to serve Krishna. This is Lobha. As a resident of Vrindavan serves Krishna. And that becomes your inspiration. You want to serve Krishna, but you want to serve Krishna, you have a desire to serve Krishna in a particular way, and somehow that's awakened in your heart. I want to serve Krishna in the relationship of a cowherd boy. I want to serve Krishna in the relationship of a gopi. I want to be Krishna's parent. And when that enters into your heart, then the inspiration is very natural. It's very, very natural. I think I'll sum it up, and then we'll go point by point through the chapter and things like that. So you get this inspiration, and it's very natural. And it says it's beyond your inspiration for serving is beyond what the Shastra says, what logic says, etc. And I give the example. It's if a young boy falls in love with a young girl, or a young girl falls in love with a young boy, right? Their inspiration is their love. The parent can't say, don't love this person. They're not the proper person, right? They can't say, don't love this person. They love them. They have that attachment. It doesn't matter. Your parents will stop you or what, but they can't stop that feeling. So it's very, very natural. So in the same way, somehow or other, by God's mercy, and we're going to describe how this can come, by God's mercy, this may enter into your heart. And it's called greed. I want to be a servant of Krishna, just like the gopis serve Krishna, just like the cowherd boys serve Krishna. I want to serve Krishna as a mother. And the thing is, if you're saying, well, do I have it or not? Am I on that level? Is it then you don't have it. It's like you can't tell a young girl, like, do I love him or do I not love him? You know? No, you know. It's very, very deep in your heart, and you know it very, very powerfully. So how does this come? It's somehow or other by mercy, either seeing the deity and becoming very attracted, or hearing the pastimes of Krishna in the stories of Krishna, and you begin to hear, how a particular person serves Krishna, and then somehow or other that feeling comes in your heart. And then that's what you want. And then it becomes, I want that, beg, borrow, or steal. I want to have that relation. And that becomes the inspiration for your service to Krishna. And Does our practices lead to it? They're actually, in one sense, they may or they may not. It's not. It, what happens is when you do practice Krishna consciousness seriously in our line, you come in contact with the impetuses to do that, obviously. When you come into contact with the devotees who have those feelings, you come in contact with the deities which are the object of love for a particular relationship. You come in contact with the stories of those things. And therefore, it may or may not, it puts you in the position to somehow or other get that feeling in your heart. And then when you have that feeling in your heart, then you begin to practice devotional service in a little bit of a different way. The inspiration becomes that type of feeling of love. By the mercy of Krishna his devotees, by seeing the deity, by hearing about the feelings of the devotees. And it can come any time. It can come any time, in any place. But when you do have it, then you become detached from other things. It's a very, very special feeling. I'm trying to find out where to go here so I can actually. Any questions? This may be a better way to go about it.
All right.
Yeah.
You were explaining how all these different practices, they're very powerful, and that, and it said that there was not an overestimation.
Yeah.
Right? But that it was true for certain devotees and not necessarily applied to all.
Yeah.
Can you explain, you know, what makes it, you know, for one devotee and what makes it not for others? Like, what is it that creates that division?
Okay, I just think we're going back now, but it's okay. What makes it different? There's always a factor of Krishna's mercy. You can't say where. Somehow your heart is open to a particular experience. Maybe it's your heart is receptive at a particular time. You know, the heart, you know, the faith is very, very interesting, how your heart is open. I look at bhakti sometimes as, you know, even coming to Krishna consciousness, we've been going through so many lifetimes. And where do we get this bhakti lata bij? Where do we get that seed of devotional service? Somehow Krishna positions us where somehow or other we're in a particular moment where we're open to that experience. You know, that's all. So somehow or other, you're open to that experience. And you come before it, and somehow in innocence, without offense, you approach something and, you know, it'll happen. It's so complicated. It deals with your sojourn in the world and Krishna's mercy and how it manifests in you. So somehow or other, you're just open to it, and then you experience it. Not everybody that came to the temple had the experience that Shlomo had. You know what? It's a whole thing. God set him up in his whole life, maybe his suffering and his innocence, and maybe the time of life he was, and maybe his degree of humility, and somehow he went before it in the right position that he can actually experience the beauty. Maybe he was very attracted to flowers and the things, and it kind of put him in a state of awe and wonder, and maybe it came into his heart. Okay, but back to Raganuga Bhakti. So I'm just want to make sure everything's understood. So somehow or other, it may come, but usually, and Prabhupada discusses this, we're generally not open to the experience unless we're seriously practicing Krishna consciousness. You know, but again, it's the same question that you asked. When does it come? But when it comes, and you actually have that greed and have that feeling, then no matter when it comes, when it eventually, if it does come and you have that feeling, then it's very serious about Krishna consciousness. Then you do become very, it's not that it can come at any time, yes, but generally it comes when you position yourself by serious practices and cultivating humility and hearing the pastimes of Krishna and worshiping the deity and purifying your heart. But at the same time, it facilitates it, but it's also a taste of Krishna consciousness. And not everybody has the same taste of Krishna consciousness. Because some people, they have a mood, and that's their mood, that they want to worship God in awe and reverence. And they can continue on the path of Vaidhi even up to Bhava. And they're actually having a spontaneous attraction, but it's still not the mood. Raganuga Bhakti means the mood of the residents of Vrindavan to serve Krishna. And have that type of love that the residents of Vrindavan have. So that may not come. Someone may be more inclined to a very reverential and distant thing where still it becomes spontaneous, but they're very cognizant and aware of God's majesty and therefore the protocol. And, you know, when you deal with a superior, Your meditation on how you please them is one of the proper etiquette and rules that you follow. So it has a little bit of a different mood. But in our particular line, it's worshiping Krishna ultimately. And worshiping Krishna means as a friend, as a lover, as a parent. Because Krishna is God that's not manifesting in majesty and et cetera in that. So generally, when somehow by your sojourn in the world, you come to the line of this, it means that somehow or other you're connected generally with those feelings, but not always. Even associates of Lord Chaitanya sometimes didn't have the inspiration and they became pure devotees, but they didn't have the inspiration to worship Krishna. They may have had a work, you know, the inspiration to worship Ram, or it was in reverence, and you can go up to prema, you can go up to love of Godhead. So it's not an exact correlation that I'm practicing devotional service, and then this mood or inspiration will come. But if you're inclined internally and you have that spirit, which probably most people do when they come to this line, as you practice Krishna consciousness and as you become innocent and pure and open your heart to the experience and hear the sweet pastimes of Krishna and come to Vrindavan where everybody is in that mood and associate with devotees who have that feeling, then certainly it puts you in a position to access that feeling. And one day, I want to be serve Krishna as the gopis serve Krishna. I want to serve Krishna as the parents of Krishna do. And then, I think what's going to be very, what'll be really good now, I'm just giving a general overview, and then we'll go through exactly the book, and I'll explain all the points. But that's the point that I wanted to make. It's a special feeling that comes into the heart. And it's actually just a different type of person that has that kind of mood of worship. And generally people that come to this line eventually have those kind of feelings and they may arise in the heart. And then it becomes greed. You become consumed with that, and that actually inspires how you perform your devotional service. For example, And one of the two main practices of it is you hear the pastimes and the stories of the object of your love that you're aspiring to serve, and the devotees and the people who are serving that mood. And you begin to hear about those, and you worship the form of the deity who is the object of the love you're aspiring for, like Radha Krishna. Or someone may have that feeling of a coward boy, then they begin to worship more Krishna Balaram. Or some person wants to be the mother of Krishna, and they worship Bal Krishna. You ever see little Krishna with the ladu? So they worship that. And that becomes their inspiration. And in the process of this, it's very much has to do with meditation, actually. The practice is very much you're meditating, and you're meditating on Vrindavan, and you're meditating on Krishna as the object of love that you're aspiring for, and you're meditating on Krishna with those devotees who love him in that way. And you begin in your mind to deeply, deeply pray that this is what I want. This is the kind of love that I'm actually aspiring for. And then you continue to practice the different items of devotional service, but the core root is that mood. I want this. I want to serve Krishna in a particular way. And in our tradition, there's great caution that it's not done prematurely. Because when you become spontaneous prematurely and you're not under the rule of regulation and law, and this is how... And you just go by your heart, and your heart is not pure, then you tend to just follow your heart, which is not pure. So what I want to do now is just, because I'm forging my strategy. Oh, I have questions, and then I'm going to forge my strategy. What I'm going to do now is, because I see it, I'm going to go through the Nectar of Devotion now, verse... I put out the main points, and what I'll discuss is what are the symptoms of someone who has this, and what is the method of practice, and what are the dangers of practicing it. But you should understand that in our line, this is what we're supposed to do. Because Lord Chaitanya specifically came to give this type of love. There's even a story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's time for Vishnu to appear because he regulates yada yada hi dharmas, you know, religion. And when there's a discrepancy in religion, then he comes. And he's about to come, but he says no. He says, actually, I want to have this kind of love. And I want to enjoy this type of love in the world. It's almost like maybe in the darkness a candle shines more brightly. But I want this type of love because it's more satisfying. And why is this love more satisfying? Because it's more forceful. When you worship God in majesty, which is the most beautiful thing in the world, there's obligation and duty in that worship. There's... distance in that worship, and this fear, even if it's pure and it's part of love. So Krishna says, no, I want the love that's forceful and spontaneous without the distance, without the obligation, without the fear. I will come in my original form as Krishna and have the worship as a lover. I'm just as a cowherd boy where the worship is as a friend. The friends, they defeat me. And when we play the chicken fights, we call them, that I have to carry someone on my back. And I may be chastised by the gopis. And my mother may punish me. There's no fear. There's no obligation. That's called spontaneous love. So Krishna comes to this world and he wants to enjoy that love. And then he feels, wow, I wasn't successful in enjoying it. And I wasn't successful in spreading it. Why? Because, this is so beautiful. He said, because I'm enjoying it as the object of love. But I want to experience what the feelings of my devotees feel. Because if you're going to experience this rasa or love, it's much more powerful to be the lover than the beloved. So I want to be the lover of God, the devotees. And then he comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is Krishna wanting to experience this type of love. And then he shows us how he does it. First of all, he gets it. And he got it when he got initiated by his guru. And all of a sudden, these deep feelings that I want to serve Krishna as Radha is serving Krishna. And I want to experience this love. And then he showed us, and then he practiced. And how did he do it? Naturally, you're chanting Hare Krishna, but you're chanting Krishna in the mood of this is my lover, or this is my friend, or this is it. And it becomes, and you're cultivating that mood or that relationship by hearing the stories of Krishna in the object of the love that you have, and with the devotees who have that love. And then he kept on chanting, and that's how he showed us how you practice it. But the first thing is you have to have it. Otherwise, you can't practice it. And how do you know you have it? Well, if you're thinking whether I have it or not, you don't. It's like a girl says, do I love him or not? Do I love him or not? Well, hey, if you're on the mental plane, it's actually like a brahmachari when he says, well, should I get married or not? You should get married. Yeah. If you're a brahmachari, you know. Right? Once you start thinking, I'm thinking of changing ashram. Once that happens, I haven't seen one person that doesn't. So it's you know. And it's because it's your natural feeling and it's awakened. It's who you are. It's your spiritual mood. And somehow or other, by Krishna's mercy, it's awakened. And then we're going to discuss when that happens, what are the practices, what are the symptoms. But what we'll do right now is we'll take a 10-minute break. Okay, what? One question, Gail, and then we'll take the break. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to reconcile the two things I heard. Yeah. One is Lord Chaitanya came specifically to give, not just the love of the gopi, but Manjari love. That's why,
Well, let's not get to that's a very controversial thing, whether it is or not, or everything. But get, we have on the internet everything now, so people can read everything. I know, but I get.
Love of the gopi.
Yeah.
Is what he came to give. But, as Bhagavad Sadhguru says, because we are connected with Lord Chaitanya makes accessible or available, love in the mood of the counterboys and mother. So I'm like, did he come to give love of the gopis or the other also very intimate, that you can only have with the intimate form of Krishna?
Yeah.
So which of
he came to experience that himself and he came to give spontaneous love in whatever relationship it is. Because in
what? The intimate spontaneous love, right?
Well, spontaneous love, what spontaneous means, or if you define spontaneous love, what it means is it's unchecked by anything external to that love, like a sense of obligation or duty, which you have when you worship God in majesty.
Yeah, but he didn't come to give that.
What?
The God.
No, he. No, no, he didn't come to give that.
Right.
He specifically came to give love of Krishna,
yeah,
which is a God who does not manifest in majesty or awe.
Right, and so of the, yeah, of the various types of relationships you can have,
yeah,
a love of Krishna, the,
yeah,
intimate,
yeah,
aspect.
Yeah.
I was hearing that,
yeah,
he was more concerned with giving love of the gopis, not so much the love of cowherd boys or the motherly parental.
In Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, who's representing Lord Chaitanya, explains all relationships with Krishna. So he represents Lord Chaitanya. And in fact, in our conception or idea, we are something. We have a relationship with Krishna, and it just brings it out. So what the question of giving, Lord Chaitanya tried to give to Murari Gupta, which is one disciple of Lord Chaitanya, and he happened to be a Ram Bhakta. But because he loved Lord Chaitanya so much, right? Because he loved Lord Chaitanya so much, he tried to become, a lover of Krishna. And he cried and cried and cried and cried at night, and he couldn't. He didn't know what to do because he loved Lord Chaitanya so much, and Lord Chaitanya was speaking so much about Krishna and spontaneous love. And at night, and he was just, so he said, yes, I'll become a Krishna devotee. And then at night, he just couldn't give up his Lord, Ram. So when he came back to Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya glorified him. Glorious is that devotee who has his Lord and worships. So that wasn't even Krishna Bhakti. It was Ram Bhakti. So yeah, in one sense, Lord Chaitanya, he came to give Anarpita Charim Charat Kununaya Vatirnakala. Anarpita, never before given. Charim Charat, for a very, very long time, he hasn't given this. Krishna hasn't given this. Samarpiyatam Unatojvala Rasam. This wonderful, spontaneous love, which is so forceful, right? It's more forceful because it's not checked. It's called Kevala Bhakti. Even in the morning when we worship our guru, we say, Sri Guru Charana Padma Kevala Bhakti. Only bhakti. It's not that when you worship God in majesty, it's not prema, it's not pure love. But we call this Kevala Bhakti. Because when you worship God in a form of intimacy, there's no check. It's much more forceful. Which is more forceful, a mother's love, a friend's love, or a servant's love? If you worship God in that, and I'll say in the local language, because I don't want to put down anybody who's worshiping majesty and has perfection in that regard, I should only be so lucky, right, to have that type of love. But in a comparative way, according to Lord Chaitanya, this is the most forceful and powerful love because it's unchecked by anything external to love. Like a friend, there's no duty. You can do it or not. But if you're worshiping the superior, you must bow down. It's your duty. A friend, I may or may not. So when you love, there's nothing checking it. Clarissa, you had a question?
No.
Okay. Okay, so what we'll do is we'll take a 5-minute break, maximum. No, minimum. No, maximum is 10 minutes. But I'll say Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through systematically what this is about. I just wanted to give a general overview. I'm not yet completely satisfied that it's completely understood, because it's a very, these subjects, they take a lot of frame of reference. And it's all of a sudden we're talking about a very high practice of devotion, but I'll try to make it relevant. Okay? Take a break and come back. Okay? I'm really trying to figure out how to teach this subject. I have a lot of experience as a teacher, and you speak to the audience's frame of reference. And there's a lot of almost background required to understand this subject, even for people that have been in Krishna consciousness for so many years. To try to understand this is sometimes, and therefore it would take dialectic. You know, ideally with this book, perhaps I would teach it every day, go verse by verse, etc. So basically what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go over with Sarah the Nectar of Devotion, and then I'll think about it this week, and if there's anything else that I can add, I'll add to that later. I also am going to put some materials on the website. I'll start with actually a story that I think will make it more relevant. Is Prabhupada talked about this, that a lot of people take to this process prematurely and in the wrong way. And there are certain lines that, because you're going to see one of the practices of this is that it says, Seva Sadaka Rupena, Siddha Rupena Chatrahi. One of the practices of this is that you meditate on the pastimes of Krishna. And you meditate, it's like a practice, you meditate on yourself as a residence of Vrindavan, serving a particular, you know, serving Krishna in a particular way. And in some practices, they would give you, a teacher would kind of let you practice it by describing to you what they would say would be your spiritual form, who you are in Krishna's pastimes. And there's a legitimate book on this. It's Prabhupada called it so-called Siddha Pranali. So even to this day, in certain places, especially Radha Kund, when people get initiated, they get what is called Eka Das Bhav. The guru tells you 11 characteristics of your spiritual form, who your family is, and all details like this. 11 characteristics. And but the problem is when you meditate on these things, if you don't have a high level of devotion, you'll see them as mundane. Like when you go to Vrindavan, even when I take people around Vrindavan, and you have a deep spiritual experience, like, you know, you can get that experience, then through that frame of reference, you can understand things a little bit more. Because you'll see, you know, they're meditating on the gopis, right? But it's a form that corresponds to what a girl is and her feelings in this world, or her actions in this world, but it has nothing to do with the consciousness of this world at all. It's the most selfless form of love. And the amorous form of it basically is just the intensity of love. But the intensity of love in this world is selfishness, basically. And that intensity, it's only how Krishna can be pleased. So when people prematurely meditate on these things, they just think of mundane things. And when they try to practice spontaneous devotion, where you're no longer guided by obligation or duty of the scriptures, but your own heart and your feelings of Krishna, then you wind up thinking of Krishna less. Because when you go to the spontaneous platform, your heart is filled with so many things that are taking you away from Krishna. So for these reasons, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta and Srila Prabhupada were very, very critical of people who would prematurely take to these type of practices. So this was my personal experience to share with you. I had a little community upstate New York, and somehow the husbands of two of my disciples, they became very interested in this. And it was a lot. Of course, everything's on the internet, and they met people from there, and the philosophy was very, very deep. And they became very, very excited in their devotional service. And then they went there and they took initiation. And you take initiation, they give you this meditation where you can meditate on your own form in Krishna Lila. And they became very, very excited about it. And with it came a lot of philosophical support. For example, you know, Lord Chaitanya himself said that Krishna said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna himself said that devotion is made weak by a sense of obligation and duty. I want this forceful love. Lord Chaitanya said, this is what I've come to give. And even Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Prabhupada's guru's guru, practiced it, a form of this where he actually got this type of initiation. So they had a lot of philosophical references. So I thought, like, I have to represent Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So I'm going to write a paper on this. So I went to Radhakund. And I met one of the people that they met that was inspiring them. And I said, okay, let's discuss this, etc. And I wrote a paper on it. And because the practice is it's called sadhana kram. It's called a step-by-step practice. And basically, when you chant, you start by chanting the name of Krishna. And then as you become more advanced and purified, when you chant the name of Krishna, the form of Krishna will manifest in that name. Just like if I said Obama, you know? So you saw his form. You know what I'm saying? So that form is in the name. So you chant the holy name, and then you're concentrating on chanting the name, and then the form comes, and then when you chant the form of Krishna, then the form, and then the qualities of Krishna, maybe his compassion and his different qualities, and then eventually the pastimes of Krishna manifest. And so the meditational process was based on kirtan. It was with and kirtan is more powerful than smaran, because the mind, if it's not exactly pure, you won't think of anything. But in kirtan, the senses are engaged, the mind is engaged. And so it was always supported by kirtan, and kirtan, and kirtan was the process. So anyway, to make a long story short, these people were very excited. They were very, you know, enthusiastic. And then sure enough, one person became an atheist and one person became a Buddhist. And it was exactly what Prabhupada said, that if it's artificial, you won't really be understanding it. You really won't be thinking of it. You'll be thinking of mundane things. And it won't actually inspire you, and you'll become disappointed. So it's a practice, but it has to be real. And when it's real, then you'll understand it. And then you'll cultivate it. So let's just go what it says in the book, and I'll just explain it. And I think what I'm going to do, you know, I have 2 weeks after next week, which we'll discuss bhava and praying. After next week, there's 2 weeks where I'm not giving class. I'll be posting things so we can continue to learn. So let's go, Rati, to the beginning of that. And I think I'll stand up for this to give me inspiration and see how I can explain it. Next. So since the essential nature of both amorous bhakti and relational bhakti, this comes later, but I put, is supreme love, and their vessels are the eternally perfected devotees, they are not discussed here. So in this section, they're not discussed because they're going to be discussed in the later sections. When Prabhupada translates it, he says, In the stage of devotional service where regulative principle is followed, there's no necessity of discussing this love, for it may develop of itself at a more advanced stage. So it'll come natural. And before it comes, if you discuss it too much, you'll just be discussing mundane things because you won't have a frame of reference for it. It's just like you give an example, a very, very young girl. You know, if someone discusses, you know, if there's some romance novel, she won't have any frame of reference to understand it because she doesn't have mature feelings yet. So it's the same thing with bhakti. Unless you actually have those mature feelings, then you have to be very careful of discussing it because you'll be projecting your own experience of it, rather than what's really it's about, which is about pure love. We'll go quick on this, and I may do it. So this is the definition of Raganuga Bhakti. It's defined as that bhakti which follows after devotion found distinctly in the inhabitants of Raja, Vrindavan, called Ragatmaka Bhakti. So basically what it means is it follows after those that are perfect in Vrindavan. And Ragatmaka basically almost means that you have, like, it's the highest love. It's within your soul. It's spontaneous and natural. So it's defined as that bhakti which follows after that. So what he's going to describe first is what is that perfected love in Vrindavan. And Raganuga Bhakti means is when you become qualified, when you actually have a legitimate and natural inspiration for that feeling, then your devotion and your practices are with the inspiration to get this. And that's the main motivating force in whatever you do. So that's, next. So this is how it's defined. It's defined as spontaneous, deep thirst for the object of love, bhakti that's inspired by this, this desire. That's called Ragatmaka Bhakti. And it's complete absorption. It's natural and spontaneous. Natural and spontaneous means it's always there. It's part of you. Right? It's just something that consumes you. That's who you are. This is your natural, eternal, spontaneous relationship with Krishna. And when what you do is completely inspired by that, those are the eternal perfected souls in Vrindavan. Fully expressed, that's what it is, exclusively. There's nothing else in your consciousness. But that love, that's who you are eternally. So when you become attracted to that naturally, right? Wow. You read about it, you hear about it, and it's something that's real and natural. I want this. And then your devotion becomes guided by that. So Raganuga Bhakti is devotion that follows that desire. You don't have that desire, but you have it in a seed form to the extent that I want that, right? I was just thinking, maybe it's not even a politically correct analogy. It's just sometimes we see, you know, people changing gender, and you know, then in their heart they say, "I am this, not this, and I want this." Right? So they say that, you know, I haven't studied it or what, but, you know, but that kind of sin. I am this. This is what you may not be it yet, but I want this. And it's real, and it's natural, and it's who you are, and it's somehow it's awakened by the mercy of a devotee. So when that happens, and your devotion is guided by that feeling, then that's different than Vaidhi, where your devotion is inspired by, this is what I should be doing. This is the correct thing to be doing, because that's God, and I am God's servant, and this is how we act, this is what we do, and this is my goal. Good, go to the next. And then it says there are two types of ragatmaka bhakti, those impelled by conjugal feelings, kamarup, that impelled by other relations, sambandharup. And they're all relationships, and I think Gail asked this, but this is kind of a special type of relationship. Kamarup means, it's interesting, it means the form of lust, but that's all it is, it's the form. It has nothing to do with lust. And Prabhupada discusses that extensively. That it's labeled because it's the chief. It's the case. And sambandha means other relationships. You want to be Krishna's parent, and you know you meet people that have this artificially, but you meet people that have this real. I really, this is what I want. I want to serve Krishna as my son. I want to serve Krishna as my friend. So basically, it's the sambandha root means to be a friend, to be a parent, or to be a lover, to be a friend, a parent of Krishna, or an intimate servant. Yeah, okay, keep on. And this is a verse from the Bhagavatam that indicates that type of love. Many, many persons have attained liberation simply by thinking of Krishna with great attention and giving up sinful activities. This great attention may be due to lusty desires. Anyway, I'm not going to have time to explain this verse, but it's actually pointing to the two types of things we said. You know, because Prabhupada will explain that fear, it really shows the power of connection with an object of meditation in emotion, right? When you have fear, that's all you can think about is the object. You feel like Kamsa, but he's inimical, so it's not bhakti. But it's an example. Kamsa, he was, Krishna's going to kill me. He's thinking day and night, Krishna, 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 Krishna. And he attained some liberation, and then Prabhupada in the purports, and I'm hoping you're reading the Nectar of Devotion, he'll describe extensively how they don't get the personal association of Krishna, but they merge into Brahman, the enemies of Krishna. So that you'll have to read in the book. Let's go on. I'm not going to discuss this. You see, so the definition of kamarup, the form of lust or the amorous feelings, that with full absorption in the beloved, which produces intrinsic thirst, I want to please Krishna in this way. And it's called bhakti because in that condition, there's only the eagerness for giving pleasure to Krishna. It's complete bhakti. It's prema. It's not kama. It's kama rup. It has that form, but it's just prema. How Krishna can be pleased by my glances, by my embrace. Keep on going. I'll go. And I say here, of course, by Jai Giridhari's drama group, we have, I say that kamarup, the form of lust, is only prema, the opposite. And because it is an excellent form of prema, such devotees of Uddhava, dear for the Lord, aspire for it. So you know the story of Uddhava? He was in Dwarka, and many people were complaining to Krishna, the residents of Vrindavan are dying in separation. They're just dying in separation. They can't live without Krishna. So they're dying in separation from Krishna. why don't you go back? There's many reasons discussed why Krishna didn't go back, and they're all legitimate reasons. But he had to do something, so he sent the message with Uddhava. And when Uddhava came to Vrindavan, and he saw, he went to a place called Uddhavakari. On our tour, that's one of the places we'll go. And he went to Uddhavakari, and he saw Radharani in this madness of ecstatic love. And he just thought, like, I thought I was a great devotee, but now my pride as a great devotee is completely crushed to dust. It's completely crushed to dust. And he desired for that. But what he desired for is not to become a gopi, but to have that love. It's just like a mother may look at and her child may have found the perfect husband or the perfect wife, and it, you know, and it's so intimate and so loving, and the mother, wow, that love is so wonderful. But the mother never wants to become the lover. She just appreciates it. So Uddhava is appreciating this. He's really appreciating this. See, it's only kama because of various amorous actions, but it's really the intense zeal for the happiness of Krishna. And when you have that intense zeal for the happiness of Krishna, it may manifest in a particular form, but it's only love. It's only a desire for Krishna's pleasure. It's just like the gopis. When Krishna had a headache, we told that story. And Narada Muni was trying to get everybody. Krishna said, I can only be cured by the dust of the feet of my devotees. No one would want to give it because it's a great offense to have something in the lowest part of your body touch a superior. If you touch your feet to a superior, it's a great offense. But the gopi said, yes, sure. We'll give our dust. They said, don't you know you'll go to hell? And the gopis said, yes, we'll go to hell. But let Krishna's headache be cured. So it's just pure love. Let's go to the next. And this is an example of this in the Bhagavatam. This is the gopis. Oh, dearly beloved, your lotus feet are so soft that we place them gently on our breasts, fearing that your feet will be hurt. Our life rests only in you. Our minds, therefore, are filled with anxiety that your tender feet may be wounded by pebbles as you roam about on the forest path. They're just intensely concerned for the pleasure of Krishna. Even if there's competition between the two main gopis, why are they competing? Only if one thinks he can serve Krishna more. If they think the other can serve Krishna more, they serve them. So this is why when people meditate on these things prematurely, they project their own experience with these forms, their own mood of these forms, when actually it's a complete manifestation of just the highest love. Let me read something here, what Prabhupada says. Excuse me. I thought I wrote it here. One second. The extreme desire to serve the Lord is manifest in the transcendental land of Raja and is specifically manifested among the gopis. The gopis' love for Krishna is so elevated that for our understanding it is sometimes be explained as lusty desire. The author of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj, has explained the distinction between lusty desire and the service attitude in this statement. Lusty desire refers to the desire to gratify one's personal senses, and transcendental desire refers to the desire for serving the senses of the Lord. In the material world, there is no such thing as a lover as wanting to please the senses of his beloved. Actually, in the material world, everyone wants mainly to gratify his own personal senses. The gopis, however, wanted nothing at all but to gratify the senses of the Lord. And there is no instance of this in the material world. Therefore, the gopis' ecstatic love for Krishna is sometimes described by scholars as being like the lusty desires of the material world. But actually, this should not be taken as a literal fact. It is simply a way of trying to understand the transcendental situation. Great devotees to the standard of Uddha are very dear friends of the Lord, and they desire to follow in the footsteps of the gopis. So the gopis' love for Krishna is certainly not material desires. How could Uddhava aspire for them? So Prabhupada goes on and on about this, that it's really something different. And even gives the example of Lord Chaitanya, who is a strict sannyasi. And in those days, the sannyas order was very, very strict. They wouldn't even hear the singing of a woman. We had that you remember that? Those Russian brahmacharis, every time we'd have a lady sing, they would kind of walk out. You remember that one? But it used to be like that. I mean, with the monks and the, you know. So Lord Chaitanya was very strict, but he would only be listening to this. Go to the next verse. Eligibility. The person who is greedy for attaining a spontaneous mood of the Lord similar to that is qualified. So what is the qualification? You have it. Lobha. What is the qualification? You have it. What is the qualification for a young boy loves a girl? Well, I love him. I love the girl. I love the boy. So somehow or other, if this comes into your heart, I want to serve Krishna as Mother Yasoda is serving. I want to serve Krishna as the gopis. I want to serve Krishna as a friend. And this is our tradition. Is actually, Lord Chaitanya came to give this. It's within our movement. It's within our society. But Prabhupada gave the way to do it by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. And when you hear all these pastimes and you chant in the mood of love for Krishna and that inspiration, desire comes, then it can waken your heart. The appearance of greed is shown when one's impetus to execute devotional service no longer rests on the scriptural rule and logic, but is reliant solely on one's natural attraction of serving Krishna upon hearing the sweetness of his pastime. So this is the danger. Because if you're not spontaneous, but you think you are, then how will you remain fixed in devotional service? Because it loosens that sense. Because now you say, okay, I'm guided by my feelings, so I don't have to, you know, follow a morning program. Because I'm spontaneously attracted to Krishna. And then you go up to your room and all you do is, you know, turn on the internet or something. You know, I'm not, you know, when you take yourself away from that kind of regulation and discipline. But if you have this kind of feeling in your heart, then everything you do, like, for example, you know, ekadasi, that's one of the main principles that was mentioned. You know, we follow ekadasi. But people that spontaneous love, sometimes they would just chant and forget it on that day, right? Because they were so spontaneously, you know, absorbed in Krishna's service or something like that. So keep on going. When advanced devotee realized devotee hears about the affairs of the devotees in Vrindavan and the mellows of Shanta, Dasya, Sakyavat, he becomes inclined in one of those ways and his intelligence becomes attracted. Indeed, he begins to covet that particular type of devotion. When such covetousness is awakened, one's intelligence no longer depends on the shastra or on logic or argument. It's no longer dependent on that. So you're not thinking of that. You know, what, you know, right now, what we're hearing right now is hopefully both, but one, this is what you should do, and you hear, and you say, yes, this is for my benefit. And you can be, I should execute devotional service. It's for my benefit. And with those understandings, this is the goal of life. And you guide your devotional service, but something else happens over here. Now is, I want to serve Krishna in this way. And you're not so cognizant of that other inspiration, which is dangerous if you don't really have a spontaneous feelings. Come next. So now this is how you practice it. And Rupa Goswami only gave 3 verses. So now that someone has that feeling, the devotee should always think of Krishna within himself and should choose a very dear devotee who is a servant of Krishna in Vrindavan. So he begins to think of Krishna. How? In the form of love he's aspiring for. Because Krishna has a form of love for a mother, which is a young child. He has a form of love for the gopis, which is, you know, a teenage, young teenage boy. And so that form, the form of God. It's not the God sitting on the throne. It's Krishna in Vrindavan. And you're thinking it within yourself. And then you choose a devotee. I want to serve Krishna in the mood of friendship, just like this devotee serves Krishna. And then you constantly meditate on that. It's actually, you can see, it's very much a process of smarin, but smarin takes a pure mind. So you have to have a certain qualification for that once it comes. One should constantly engage in topics about that servitor and his loving relationship with Krishna, and one should live in Vrindavan. If one is physically unable to go, he should mentally live there. So what happens is, now, what are you hearing? You start to hear, you're attracted to hear about Krishna in the relationship you're aspiring for and about the devotees who are aspiring for that. And then, so this is what you should do, and now how you do it. Next. Advanced devotee who is inclined to spontaneous should follow the activities of particular sosa in Vrindavan. He should execute externally, seva sadaka rupena. So you follow a particular devotee, and siddha rupena chatrihi, and internally, from his self-realized position. So what this means, you should follow a devotee in Vrindavan. So it means something like, I'll give you an example. At a very advanced stage, you're hearing about the pastimes, and you say, and it's really natural, it awakens in your heart, and you say, I want to serve Krishna as one of the young gopis serves Krishna, right? They have a particular service, and so this is very attractive to me. I want this. So then what you do is you follow a devotee who has realized this in the activities he does, like Rupa Goswami, who wrote the book. What does he do? You know, he chanting Hare Krishna, and he, you know, whatever his activities are, you follow in his practitioner. But he's already realized this. So he has a perfected form. And he's Rupa Manjari. He's a young gopi. So you follow that also in the mentally. So it's a very, very, you have to be very pure, actually, to do that. And you begin to follow that internally. And sometimes this is where there are processes where a guru would actually give one his form. It's called sarup, and how he meditates, etc. But it's such cheating going on. One time, one Russian devotee, he got his perfected form, 11 characteristics. Right? Who's your name? Who's your mother? Who's your father? You know, what's your address? What's this? What's this? All these different things, which is a legitimate thing on a very advanced platform. So he got that. And then he met another guy of the same guru, and they had the same form. You know, so that kind of thing. Okay, go on. Learned acharyas know that the 64 principles of Vaidhi Bhakti, headed by hearing and chanting, are also useful in Raganuga Bhakti. So, so what happens is you don't give up the practices of devotion, but you do them in that mood. Now, you don't give up chanting and hearing, but what are you chanting and hearing about? And what is your mood of chanting? And what is your mood of hearing? And so you continue to do those. And the ones especially that are useful. So you worship the deity, but what deity you worship? Now you're in the mood of you have that feeling that you like to serve Krishna like Lalita and Vishakha and the gopis. So then you worship the deity, but you worship Radha and Krishna, but with that aspiration. And or you worship Baal Krishna, and you begin to chant and hear, and then you're chanting and hearing. There's so much poetry, so many songs, so many things written by the six Goswamis. They wrote books for these kind of meditations. And you start reading those stories, et cetera, and it's not artificial. It's real. Any questions? Gail? Yeah. Okay. Lily?
Is there really a difference between Raganuga and Ragatuga, or are they just synonyms?
No, they're different. In the Nectar of Devotion, I explained that at my Waves of Devotion. Somehow Prabhupada uses the term Raganuga for Ragatmaka. But if you look in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Prabhupada translates it, he translates. Ragatmaka is the devotion that is found, the perfected devotion that's found in Vrindavan in the eternal residence. And Raganuga Bhakti is when you have the aspiration for that and you're practicing. Raganuga Bhakti is in the practice of sadhana bhakti. It's a practice. It's a practice for someone who has this feeling awakened in their heart. Gail?
Just to confirm something you just said, we're followers of Rupa Goswami.
Yeah.
He said that he do what he does.
Yeah. Yeah.
So even though our own particular mood as a Raganuga, may be different from a Manjari, we still should follow his practices.
No. You don't follow him then. You follow a person who has the aspiration that you have. You pick the devotee, or you become inspired by the devotee who loves Krishna in the way that you want to love Krishna. Clarissa? Well, it's yeah. No, I understand the point. It's something like people are in this line are worshippers of Krishna, and when you get initiated in this line, right, it described that somehow or other you become connected, and when initiation in the perfected form is described that that connection, you get Divyagyan, and Divyagyan means transcendental consciousness. And what is it described as? Bhagavat Sarup Gyan, Sambandha Vishesh Gyan. So let's say you get initiated by Prabhupada, then you get Radha and Krishna. You're not getting Ram and Lakshman and Hanuman or Lakshmi Narayan. You're getting connected to Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. And Sambandha Vishesh Gyan, you're getting a sense of this is the love we're aspiring for. Because if you read the story, we're going to read, and you'll read through the Bhagavatam, and when you read all the 9 cantos and you come to the 10th canto and you become purified, then what happens is you know, you're become purified in heart, you have the right conceptions, and then you'll be hearing about who? The gopis and the cowherd boys and things. So it's very natural in our line to aspire from very beginning, just like you're already a servant of Radha Muralidhar, and you're making garlands for Radha Muralidhar. So you're already a servant of Radha Muralidhar. So you're already getting attraction to serve Krishna. And right now, Prabhupada said we worship in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan, and others in awe and reverence. This is God, and we're careful with the rules. And you know, when they say, like they describe Raganuga in there, that someone had this mood of friendship and he lied down in front of the deities, right? Well, that's against the rules, right? But it's not against his mood of devotion. So that's an example, right? So that's what'll happen. One will hear and chant and, you know, chant the holy name of Krishna and become purified and read the 10th canto and hear the pastimes of Krishna and chant the holy name. And as one becomes more and more and more purified, then these thoughts will come into the mind that I want to serve Krishna. I want to be a servant of Radha Muralidhar. And then you'll hear about Radha Muralidhar in the Bhagavatam, because it's Krishna, and you'll hear about the gopis, and you'll say, at a particular time, I want to serve like that. And then, if it's really profound and really deep in your heart, at a very, very, you know, mature stage of devotional service, then how will you cultivate it? Well, you'll begin to read all the works of the Goswamis, and they describe all these different things and feelings and moods. Rupa Goswami wrote so many books. Raghunath Das Goswami wrote so many books. And you'll read about all these feelings. And that feeling, you'll cultivate it more and more. And then as you're chanting Hare Krishna, right, then all of a sudden the form of that Krishna who you want a relationship will manifest in the mind. And then the qualities of that person. And then eventually, then the pastimes of that person will manifest. So you'll be down there in Union Square chanting and dancing. You'll still be chanting and dancing in Union Square. You'll still be doing the kirtan in Union Square. But your desire when you're chanting will be much different. Your desire will be like Ram Roy. He's not just chanting and dancing. He has a particular aspiration of who he wants to serve and how he wants to serve and what. But he's doing it. He's reading and he's studying the Bhagavatam. He's reading the whole Bhagavatam again from the very beginning. And then you'll go to Vrindavan and you'll see the mood, and then there'll be the devotees there. And by this practice and absorption and opening our hearts, all these inspirations, like Prabhupada set up the whole movement, right, for Panchanga Bhakti, these 5 most important items. For example, he built all those places in Vrindavan. He concentrated on the holy name. He printed the Bhagavatam, right, and created the mood of service to the devotees. And worship of the deities, he established so many deities. So let's say you're coming and you're following the prat, and you're chanting and your heart is becoming purified and you're associating with those devotees who have these intimate feelings, and then you're reading and hearing the Bhagavatam, right, and reading the books and developing a purified consciousness. And then at a particular time, by Krishna's mercy, being in contact with all this stimulus of the devotees and being in contact with the stimulus of the deities and hearing these stories, then at a particular time, like Ram Roy, you may have a feeling in your heart, you know, I really want to serve Krishna in a particular mood, which you won't express externally. You won't tell people. What? What will happen is you'll continue with your service, but the service will be done in a particular mood. It'll be done in a particular mood that I want this. And then in our line, what we do is then you read these stories, and like there's a book by Raghunath Das called Valap Kushmanjali, where he explains all the moods of the young gopis and their aspirations. And then you'll read them, and it's not that you'll think that, oh, I am that, or I am one of them, but you'll say, yes, oh, that's so sweet. I would like to have that. So here, I took something from another book. Next. This is from a book called Rag Vartman Chandrika, which the ways of dealing with Vaidhi to cultivate Raganuga, because you don't change what you're doing, you change the attitude. What? Yeah, you change your attitude. It's not that you change your attitude is changed. So this is what it says. So he said this is five ways. Abhishta Bhav Mayi. The main thing is you have this relationship with Krishna. I want to serve Krishna as the gopis serve Krishna. Then the essential practices must be done. Like you'll be chanting and hearing, right? But in that mood. So you'll take Vaidhi, all the things, there's some that must be done. And then there's some that are favorable, but sometimes may be neglected. They may be neglected sometimes. Favorable and may be neglected. Let me see if I wrote a good example of that. Favorable and maybe neglected, like, yeah, maybe. What? Yeah. But actually speaking, when you have this mood, well, generally what will happen is you'll go to Mangal Arati, but you won't just be going to finish it, but what you'll be meditating on is Radha and Krishna waking up in the morning. And they're waking up in the morning, and the gopis are doing artik. And you'll be meditating on the pastimes that cultivate that particular mood. And in fact, there are books written by the Goswamis which outline Krishna's life in eight different, it's called Astaka Lila Smaran. There's eight different parts of Krishna's day, and what pastimes he does, and what activities. And at that particular time of the day, you'll be meditating on what Krishna is doing and what the devotee is doing that you're aspiring to attain. And this will be your meditation, although you'll keep the same activities. And again, always the main thing is kirtan. Because if there's any smarana and a remembrance that comes, it will come when you're chanting japa, or when you're doing kirtan, and it will come very naturally. Because when you'll say Krishna, you'll have so much affection for the person whose name you called in a particular relationship that you'll think of his qualities, you'll think of his pastimes, you'll think of the activities that you aspire for in that. And because you're reading all these Goswami literatures that describe all this, all these things will come to your mind. And then there's things that are neither favorable or unfavorable. So sometimes you'll do them, sometimes you're not. And there's things you won't do. There's certain practices that won't facilitate intimacy. Like you won't worship with mudras or nyas, putting mantras on your body. Or you won't worship certain deities because they're not in your mood. Or if you'll see Lord Ramachandra, you'll see, oh, my Krishna, he's dressed as a king. You'll look at it in that way. Okay, we'll go on. Those who develop a longing for the mood of devotion of the gopis after seeing the sweetness in the deity of Krishna and the gopis, or after hearing about his pastimes of the gopis, are qualified for Raghunuga Sangha. This is the main thing. And this is what Prabhupada gives. You're worshiping certain deities, you're hearing, and you're hearing from people who have these moods. And then that aspiration will come. And how do you know you have it? What? You know. Or you don't have it and you think you know. But that's when motive enters into your heart. And, okay, and then, this we don't discuss. And then, of course, there's parental or gopi. Devotees who attract to Krishna's parents or friends should follow in the footsteps of Nanda Maharaj or Subal, respectively. And then, next one. The Vallabhas, I don't know if you know Shamdas, they also practice Raghunuga Bhakti. And they called it Pushti Marg. And they generally worship Baal Krishna. But Shamdas said, no, we also worship Radha Krishna. So if you go, then what would be the practice? There would be so many songs that you would sing in the particular moods, and you would aspire. And in their practice, you get a particular deity and you worship that deity in a particular mood. So, any questions you have, you can write me or ask me personally, because this is a very, very deep... Any questions now? Really, yes. What's that?
With Raghunuga, is it only the four higher rasas, or
yeah,
does it also include the Shanta?
No, not Shanta. Shanta rasa is generally an appreciation of God in awe and reverence. Yeah. It's Shantaras, but sometimes mixed with a more intimate feeling. Like the cows have motherly affection. Anything else? We just have 2 more minutes. I'm definitely ending on time today. Any other questions? Julie, yeah.
Motherly, or they're all equal. It just depends on, or just
they're equal. It's just like a mother doesn't want to be a lover, but technically speaking, that a parent is also a friend, but a friend is not a parent, and a lover is also a parent and a friend, right? And they're also servants, all of them. So they're equal. But technically speaking, the Madhurya Ras is a little bit more rich. I think next week, when we believe it or not, when we discuss Bhava or Prem, it'll be more easy to understand. And this is the first time I've actually taught this subject to such a wide audience in such a short time. And I'm meditating on, you know, how to make it really understood, but I wrote a paper that if you want to read, you can read, and I'll post it on the website if you really want to understand this. Has anybody read that paper yet?
Yeah.
What?
Oh,
that's right. Okay, you read it again. Okay, so let's finish for today exactly on time. And I hope I do all see you next week, because then after that I won't see you again for almost 2 or 3 weeks. The 18th till the 7th. That's about... Yeah, that'll come as 3. Next week. What? Maybe you can get overtime in the trains.
So we have you May 16th and June 6th.
What's that?
May 16th is the next one, and then not again until June 6th.
Yeah, yeah. And next week, read chapters 17, 18, and 19. It's only about 14 pages. But it'll be more concrete, definite, clear stuff. It's just really a deep subject.
You made this very clear, I felt.
Well, let's see. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, we'll end for today. Srila Prabhupada.